This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
From a competition standpoint, I think it's going to be, you know, it's so exciting. I think it's a unique time in this game. The things that we've had to do to push this forward are unique, and certainly having the opportunity to have a Canadian division where it's a one anthem game every night type thing, and the excitement that goes along with it will certainly be unprecedented.
It's true. One anthem every night.
I saw your tweet about that.
I thought they might play the Rough Riders anthem.
But it was funny because like when he was talking about
The Saskatchewan Rough Riders, right?
No, he's talking about the Rough Riders.
I know what he's talking about, David.
Rough.
Yes, I understand. R-U-F-F.
But no, it was interesting. I hadn't thought about that until Chevalier had mentioned that in his press availability, that it would be one anthem. Takes off five. Although I like the Star Spangled Banner. Good anthem.
It is a quality anthem, as you well know. My allegiances to the United States run deep. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our Illegal Curve question of the day, of course. What aspect, what storyline or storylines of Winnipeg Jets training camp have you most interested? We've been asking for your comments all morning at Illegal Curve. You can send them via text. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Let's see what's happening. Let's open up the Odd Shark inbox presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. We open up the texters. We got a lot of people saying, Legal Curve, love your thoughts on all things Winnipeg Jets. Thanks, you guys rock. Well, you rock too.
That was for my dad, actually.
That was your dad. Okay.
Told my dad to text him.
That was very nice of your dad in that case. Tom from Gilbert Plains texts. He says his focus of this Jets training camp will be on the defensive pairings, as this was our weakness last season, especially the 5-6 spots. That's where Tom from Gilbert Plains is focusing his attention. We got a lot of comments back from our Jack Roslovic segment in the first hour. Ryan says that Roslovic is at best a 30 or 40 point NHLer. Great skater, nice hands, energetic forecheck, and strong puck pursuit. However, he doesn't have the head to break through and be a consistent top six winger. Trade him ASAP. Wow. No beating around the bush there from Ryan. He was a throw-in on the Evander Kane trade, and if you can get an NHL defenseman or a first-round pick, do it. I don't think you're getting a first-round pick for Roslovic at this point, but we appreciate your comments, Ryan, texting us or tweeting at us about Jack Roslovic.
He wasn't actually a throw-in because the Jets hadn't drafted him yet.
I think he meant the draft. The late first-round pick was, exactly.
Awesome, but
appreciate Ryan's contribution to the show. We want you to contribute at Illegal Curve. Send your text to 129090, talking about Roslovic, talking about Line A, talking about the storylines ahead of Jets training camp, which of course opens on Monday with the first on-ice sessions closed to the public. Just want to remind people that. I know for so many years people are used to heading down to the Iceplex, but the reality of the situation, closed to the public, but illegalcurve.com, that's open to anybody who wants to log on and check the latest Winnipeg Jets news. So let's look at this Jets schedule. We mentioned it in our interview with Scotty Billick back in hour number one. 9 back-to-back games for the Winnipeg Jets. 5 of the back-to-backs feature a pair of home games, so no travel, of course, involved with that. 3 of the back-to-backs are consecutive games on the road, and then on March 17th and 18th, they'll play at home and then head out on the road for the second half of a back-to-back. We know there's going to be these games where they're playing the same team 3 times in a row, 4 times in a row. You know, familiarity breeds contempt. That's why I don't like you guys. So, I mean, I think this is going to be a fun schedule in that, even though there won't be anybody in the buildings, there's going to be a lot of edginess and a lot of, let's say post-whistle scrums between the on-ice combatants.
Absolutely. I mean, there are going to be new rivalries that are formed, right? Mm-hmm. And there are going to be some rivalries that we've seen in the past, such as the Jets and Flames renewed, right? And, you know, Drew, you mentioned the 9 back-to-backs, right? Yeah. So if you do the math, that's 18 games. That's essentially
son of a math professor, right there, ladies and gentlemen.
No big deal, John Ginsburg, U of W math, right there, right? But you know, that's a third of the games are involved in back to backs, essentially, not exactly, but it's essentially a third of the games because there's only 56 games, right? And you know, I was looking at the schedule. I didn't really give it a full breakdown until a few days ago when I knew that we were going to talk about it. But you know, you start off with a lot of home games, mm-hmm. and what's really interesting, not right off the bat because you've got 3 of the first 4 on the road, but I'm talking about the first month of the season.
Yeah. 8 of your first 11 games,
right,
spanning this January into the first couple days of February are in Winnipeg.
Right. Starting and the January 23rd game against Ottawa at home, you've got 7 in a row.
Yeah.
Right? So that stood out to me right off the bat. You've got Ottawa three times in 5 days, two on the road, one at home. But the first game against Ottawa is the second game of a back-to-back on the road. So, you know, right off the bat, that's a tricky schedule. You can say whatever you want about the Ottawa Senators, but you've got a back-to-back right away. And guys, NHL teams across the league are going to have back-to-backs to begin the season, like in the first week or two of the season. Mm-hmm. So that's not unique. Everybody's going to be, you know, dealing with a condensed schedule.
Last year, the Jets had 3 and 4 nights to start the year, if you remember.
Yeah, New York, New Jersey,
and then the Islanders. Yeah. Yeah. 4 and 6 when they went to Pittsburgh right
that
after
first
that.
Game didn't start off too well, but luckily they
neither did the Devils game. Well, they had that comeback.
Yeah, the comeback was one of the better ones of the year, but yeah, that's what stood out to me. And then, you know, we talked about the home games the first month of the season, and I know Dave mentioned this on the website, early February, 3 home games in 4 days against Calgary. Like, you see that, I believe, once more. I think they play
Toronto.
Is it Toronto?
Yeah, in April.
In March? Or April. Is it April?
They have three consecutive games in Toronto. None of them are back-to-backs, but a Tuesday, a Thursday, and a Saturday at the
but
Maple
they also,
Leafs.
But they have three in April at home. Against the Leafs.
Right. Yeah. So you've got that a few times. So, I mean, those are going to be very challenging, regardless if it's, you know, at home or on the road. I realize, you know, that at home, you know, there's not the travel aspect, but come on, it's not, you know, when you're traveling, most of the travel this year is going to be pretty light, right? Well, like, when you're flying to Alberta, or, you know, maybe it's a little bit further to BC, but, you know, these guys get on a 2.5 hour flight. It's, I don't think it's going to factor in. So that's something that stood out to me. And then, you know, March is going to be a very difficult month, 12 games on the road out of 16. So that stood out to me. We know that, you know, a lot of the moves that are made, you know, in the season kind of happen right around that time, right? A couple of months into the season. So that's going to be a tough stretch for the Jets. But overall, I just think it's going to be very interesting to see these, you know, back-to-back games against the same team or 3 games in a row against the same team. It's essentially what you're having is mini playoff series.
But I don't know if you guys remember it, but if you go back to, I want to say it was last October or last November, before the pandemic, before, you know, when we were in a normal world, mm-hmm. you know, we had a segment on the show because Jonathan Toews, and we send our best to Jonathan Toews, you know, fighting an undisclosed health issue that's going to result in him missing certainly the start of training camp. He's out indefinitely for the Blackhawks, but we send our best to him and hope nothing but the best health for him. If you remember, Jonathan Toews has advocated for more of a quote-unquote baseball-style schedule mm-hmm. for a lot of years, saying it'll reduce the wear and tear. He actually made a point that it reduces your greenhouse gas emissions if you are of an environmentalist bent. And,
it's true, though.
Hopefully we all are.
It does.
Yeah. Of course it does. And so, you know, he's getting, you know, this is what he's been advocating for, you know, in a pre-pandemic world. So I wonder if the NHL might not try and use this more as a model going forward. You know, like I said, you know, you create some rivalries, you create some bitterness. You know, if there's a, you know, a big hit in the game, in game one, and game two is against the same team the next night, you know, there's a bit of an excitement in the air because of the, quote, maybe a bit of a revenge factor, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know. This might be a platform that the NHL looks to replicate in further years, obviously with a more normal divisional alignment.
Well, I mean, I would be so sure about that. I mean, remember, this is a new normal, and I suspect that a lot is going to be looked at from the NHL's perspective. But if you have 7 Canadian teams and it has a tremendous level of success,
sure.
is it necessarily a guarantee that you're not going to see that continued? I wouldn't be so...
You think
certain.
With Seattle coming in, you could see a more fulsome realignment? Is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, I don't know exactly how. I'm just saying we're going to see how this works out. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think it's, you know, the way the schedule plays itself out, especially as he's mentioned that February schedule against Calgary, which really is actually 4 games in a row, 3 in Winnipeg,
yeah.
1 in Calgary. So that is going to set itself up to be like incredible, I think. Like that, I mean, there's a bit of a gap between the game 3 and game 4.
Yeah, 4 days off. Thursday, then a Tuesday.
Right, and then you go to Calgary. But I still think that's going to be interesting. And I think if you're the Jets and, you know, we know they're going to be in tight, I think the interesting thing is you've got 3 of your last 4 games against the Senators. So I think there's an opportunity for the Jets to accumulate points as you're trying to finish within that top 4 of the division.
Yeah, and one last thing, too. Like, we mentioned that early on in the season, I think it's the second game, the Jets play the Leafs.
Yeah.
They don't play the Leafs at all in February, and then in March and April, They have five games against the Leafs, including, we mentioned in April, they've got those three straight games at home between, I think it's the 21st to the 24th of April, at the end of April, end of the regular season. So they're going to have the Leafs a lot in March and April. And then, you know, we talked about they've got Ottawa three times in four games to start the season. Mm-hmm. And then they've got that back-to-back at home to end the season. So those Ontario teams, I mean, we know that Ottawa is most likely going to be the last-place team in the division. But as you've mentioned, Drew, the Senators are much improved this year. The Senators, they made a lot of good moves, including Matt Murray in net. They're not going to be a pushover anymore.
They certainly are not. I still expect them to be towards the bottom of the Canadian division, but they're not going to be as woesome mm-hmm. as they have been for the last couple of years. One final point. There aren't any start times attached to these games yet. I would expect, and we've sort of heard this, you know, under the radar a little bit, you're going to see some unique start times for games this season.
Bring back the Southeast Division start time.
Well, you
remember that?
Yeah.
The Jets versus Lightning at 6 o'clock.
I'd have to leave the office at 2 just to make sure I can get it ready for that game.
Exactly. So don't necessarily expect, with no fans in the building, you know, television is more of a factor than the fans' attendance. So don't necessarily expect Jets games in the midweek to necessarily start at the 7 o'clock time.
No, we have no idea.
There's going to be some 9 o'clock start times, for
I think, especially on Saturdays.
Well, when you're playing the Western teams, like the Vancouver's or the Edmonton's, and the Calgary's, that seems reasonable.
Exactly. So just, you know, when the start times come out, and that should hopefully be, well, clearly it'll have to be in the next 2 weeks when they come out with the television broadcast
times. As a quick aside, you got to give the kudos to these schedule makers because, you know, again, it's a little easier in the sense that there's not a, you don't have concerts to go up against. You don't have all these other, you know, distractions that usually impact arenas, circuses, literally circuses going on. So to me, but the fact that they were able to get this done, because usually the schedule is started on the previous year.
Sure.
And I know it's not that they just started it when they realized that they were going to return to play. They've obviously been working on it and condensing it and changing it. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, it's a pretty remarkable achievement to get this to work for all of these teams in all of these different cities.
An equally remarkable achievement is that the Tampa Bay Lightning have managed to become salary cap compliant without decimating the core of their roster. We'll talk about that
next. San Jose Sharks model.
Well, we'll talk about that next. I got some thoughts on that. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Lightning were dealt a huge blow today. Nikita Kucherov will have hip surgery and miss the entire regular season. The team is hoping he could return for the playoffs. Kucherov led the league with 34 points in 25 postseason games this summer, leading the franchise to its second ever Stanley Cup.
Nikita Kucherov out of the Tampa Bay Lightning lineup. He'll miss the regular season. Maybe a silver lining for the Lightning in that they no longer have to figure out how to deal with their salary cap issues as seriously. No Kucherov means LTIR, which means they get to keep most of the core of the roster together, and Kucherov expected back for the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Welcome back.
Have you seen Silver Linings Playbook?
I have.
It's a nice movie.
That's nice. Thank you for your...
I enjoyed it.
I hope everyone's enjoyed as these movie reviews. They're brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. But Drew, how can they have comedy? It's code red. Zoom comedy. It was hugely successful on New Year's Eve. Rumors is doing it every week. You buy a ticket through their website, rumorscomedyclub.com. You can join the hundreds of people who did it on New Year's Eve. They sat at home and they watched great, unbelievable, quality stand-up comedy from the comfort of their living room, doing it in a safe and pandemic-friendly manner. Tickets available, information available through our friends at rumorscomedyclub.com. So Kucherov, this stinks to me, and I am a cynic. And I don't know if you saw the back and forth that I had with our good buddy Scotty Billick about it.
Mm-hmm,
but I said that the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, Kucherov, all of a sudden he needs surgery, despite the season ending months ago. And he needs that surgery a week before the season starts. And, well, there you go. The Tampa Bay Lightning have more or less solved their salary cap issues as a result.
Can you just give me 1 second? I'm going to run into the kitchen and get you a tinfoil hat.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. That'll explain the voices talking to me in my head. This stinks to me. This stinks to me as the team saying, Kucherov, you might be a little bit injured, eh? You might need that surgery. Don't have that surgery so soon. Let's wait. We'll give you the regular season off. We think that we can make the playoffs in a weak division. even without you, because they have a hell of a team, you'll come back for the playoffs, for the run to the Stanley Cup, and we get to keep the team together for a full another year. Instead, you know, to resolve their salary cap issues, what did it cost them? Braden Coburn and Cedric Paquette? I mean, that's not taking your key guys out of your roster.
No.
So to me, this is legal salary cap manipulation that if the NHL really wanted to investigate it, they could, but they won't because the NHL doesn't investigate anything.
Right, and you're entitled to think that, right?
Thank
because
you.
You make a good point, though. I mean, why didn't Nikita... If a player had that injury based on something that happened in the playoffs, you would expect the surgery to happen shortly after. Like, let's be honest, these NHL players get, you know, into the surgery room a lot quicker than, you know, a slob like me.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, that's why it took me a year and a half to get my ACL surgery, as you know, Drew.
Yeah,
right?
And but, you're still waiting for the next 12 years to do your rehab.
Exactly. But no, I mean, it's something that we didn't expect to happen, right? Like, a couple of months ago, I think it was, Tyler Johnson was a guy
who placed on waivers,
and no one claimed him, right? Yeah. And Tyler Johnson's a really good hockey player. Like, he's a guy that can play on the second or third line of any team in the league, so that was a little bit surprising. But a lot of that had to do, guys, with, you know, other teams having salary cap issues. All you have to do is go on Cap Friendly and see how many teams are right up against the salary cap or over the salary cap or just under the cap, right? So it's not surprising that Tyler Johnson wasn't moved, but it was surprising that they didn't have to move a guy like Alex Killorn, was a player that we'd been hearing about for months, right? We spoke with Brian Engblom about a month ago, and if you go back and listen to that interview, Brian was saying, yeah, it's most likely going to be Alex Killorn or Yanni Gourde was the other guy, or of course, Tyler Johnson. But when a guy clears waivers and you can get him for free, it kind of wouldn't make sense why you would give something up.
It tells you what the market is for.
Exactly. So it was very shocking that the way the Lightning got out of salary cap hell was to just place Nikita Kucherov on LTIR.
So my conspiracy thinking is that they knew, you know, probably a month, maybe 6 weeks ago, that Kucherov needed surgery.
And the timeline with which to recovery.
Right. So and the timeline would have been him coming back, you know, with a month left in the regular season.
Right.
Well, that doesn't do the Tampa Bay Lightning any favors to have him come back a month before the start of the end of the regular season. Because once the playoffs hit, there's no salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
So you hold him out, just like the Blackhawks did with Patrick Kane a number of years ago. Remember?
Kane
was out of the lineup.
Compliance.
Yeah. So they said to Kane, don't rush back for the last 2 weeks of the regular season. We don't need you at that point in time. We're already going to be a playoff team. Take your time, do your full rehab, have your surgery, in the case of Kucherov, have your surgery closer to the start of the season. You'll be off the ice until a month before the regular season ends. Then you can get on the ice, then you can get training, then you can get skating, and boom, you'll be ready for game one of the playoffs when, lo and behold, there's no more salary cap and the Tampa Bay Lightning get to be a full-strength team. You know, and people said, well, you know, Kucherov's too important for their regular season to do that. And Kucherov's a great player, don't get me wrong. But are you telling me the Tampa Bay Lightning are not going to be a playoff team without Nikita Kucherov?
No, but they won't be as good of a team. I mean, Kucherov is one of the best right-wingers in the league. I agree with you, Drew. I mean, there's a reason why they won the Stanley Cup. We thought they were going to win the Stanley Cup 2 years ago when they had 62 wins, right? Nobody was shocked that they won the Stanley Cup this past year.
Nope.
So you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a very deep team. I would be pretty surprised. Who knows? I mean, there's going to be a lot. There's always one or two teams that make the playoffs that you didn't expect.
Right.
If the Lightning missed the playoffs, though, that would be a big shocker. And I agree with you. It's a little bit peculiar.
Even without Kucherov, they're the best team in their central division. I mean, never mind the fact the Lightning are in the central division. I mean, none of that makes any sense. They're still the best team there. Or a top two team if you want to argue with me.
Well, you've got one of the best goalies in the league.
Yeah.
You've got arguably the best defense in the league.
Yeah.
And you've arguably got the best forward depth in the league, right?
Even without Kucherov.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, and that was why, guys, they won the Stanley Cup without Stamkos.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Steven Stamkos scored the one beautiful goal.
Yeah.
And then aside from that, didn't play. So it's kind of the same thing. The Lightning, look, Drew, we don't know when it was officially announced. I'm not talking about by the club. I mean, we don't know when exactly Kucherov required that surgery.
Right.
I mean, your timeline could be right. Maybe he required the surgery 3 months ago. I have no idea.
Right.
But it certainly was convenient for the Lightning because instead of having to trade quality players like Yanni Gourde or Alex Killorn, and make no mistake about it. I mean, Braden Point, Nikita Kucherov, Victor Hedman, Anthony Cirelli. These are top players. But Alex Killorn is a hell of a hockey player, and so is Yanni Gourde. I mean, these are really good players, so they don't have to give up one of those players,
right?
And they're still under the salary cap. So it's very convenient for them in terms of, you know, how the timeline worked, and was there maybe some manipulation there? Maybe there was. I have no idea, but it certainly seems like that.
So what we're doing now is we're telling people that Drew may not be on next week's show because he's flying down to Tampa to begin the investigation.
Well, let's be honest. The conspiracy theories and Florida would fit very nicely together. I wouldn't be out of place
you
there.
You would definitely not be out of place.
Isn't Gore going to be there, too?
Well, use my parents' condo. It'll be fine.
Thank you, Dave. That's very kind of you. I'm pretty sure your dad just is texting you right now saying he's not allowed in.
Well, although it would be quite a drive from the East Coast to the West Coast, but you could make it, I think.
You know what? I'm up for a challenge. You know what? I'll go to the States and I'll just call myself a politician, and I won't have any problems about crossing the border.
No, but I think look, it's curious. I think Ezzy uses the right word. I think curious is the right word. I think there's no doubt that when you hear that, you think, well, how convenient you now are able to sign your guys, keep your core together, and defend your Stanley Cup with the best possible team. Because it is, again, interesting how they keep referencing he's out for the regular season.
Yeah. Like
a lot of teams will say, oh, this guy is done for the year regardless.
Yeah.
They're saying he's done for the regular season.
Emphasis
on regular. It definitely adds fodder to your fire.
When we come back, Hal Gill is a Nashville Predators broadcaster. He'll join us to talk about the Preds and their offseason and some of their signings that they've made over the last couple of weeks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program Nashville Predators broadcaster Hal Gill. Hal, good morning, Happy New Year, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Happy New Year, guys.
Thank you, Hal. Used to the Predators being a division rival of the Jets, so that'll take some getting used to, at least for this 1 year, the two teams, of course, being in separate divisions. You know, Hal, you look at this Predators offseason, and they made a couple late signings in the past couple weeks, you know, bringing back Michael Granlund, picking up Eric Halla. And before that, I thought it was one of the more peculiar offseasons in the entire NHL because, you know, the status quo I don't think is good enough for Nashville given the way the last couple seasons have ended. So do you think that these late signings have changed the Predators offseason and in any significant manner, or do you think it's sort of trying to just sort of keep their head above the water?
It's a tough question because I think we're going to find out soon. It's so crazy right now. I don't know what kind of camp we're going to see. John Hines, you know, he had his little brush up camp before they went into the bubble. But he hasn't had a normal training camp, and this I don't think is going to be normal either, but I know he wants competition. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've taken out of the offseason is competition for ice time. I feel like the Preds kind of got lulled to sleep over the last few years where they were good in the regular season, and then when it came crunch time and they had to be clutch and step up, they kind of petered out. So I think they want to change that, and they want to create that competition that pushes guys to perform. And so I think they kind of they went with the Jofa line with Johansson, Forsberg, and Arvidsson. After that, I think you look at Duchesne as a second-line center, and there's going to be people fighting for his line mate's position. You signed Cunning, you signed Granlund back. I know Granlund is going to work hard in that position. Haula comes back. Is he healthy enough? Can he take a wing spot on that second line? Cal Yarncroak has been dying, chomping at the bit to get at that one. And then we got some young guys like Trennan that have played well in the past that want to get up there. Tolvanen is another guy that we're waiting to see if he can jump in and score goals on the NHL stage. And then Tomasino, who we're watching in the World Juniors, is is another guy that I think could fight for that spot. So I think there's a lot of competition, and I think that's kind of the mentality is to fight for spots, fight for ice time, and ultimately fight for goals. And that's what they're looking for, is a little more jam in their game.
Hal, earlier you mentioned we don't really know what to expect here, with Predators training camp, and I think you could, apply that to almost all 31 NHL teams or all 31 yeah. NHL teams. And, you played over 1,100 games in the NHL, and, you played through a couple of lockouts back in 2005 and then, the 2012-13 lockout, which was the Jets' second year in the NHL, but never something quite like this, right, where you only have 10 days in training camp and no preseason games. So, as a former player, like what's that mindset? I mean, how does that change your approach? A real short training camp, especially if you're one of those players that you just mentioned, you're not sure if they're going to make the club full time. How would that possibly change? Does that just mean that you have to be more impressive, on the ice during training camp for the coaches?
Obviously, you want to jump out and make a splash. it's not like the old days where you can't just go out and start a fight and try to prove yourself with your toughness. Now you have to score goals. So if you're not clicking and the timing isn't quite right and the chemistry isn't there, you can be looked over pretty quick. So yeah, you want to stand out. I think the biggest challenge, and this is during the lockouts, is your training and your normal routine in the summer is to gear up for a certain time, and now you don't have that time. So do you back off? You don't want to back off too much. You don't want to come out too hard and wear yourself out. It's such a delicate balance. It's going to be interesting to see how these guys handle it. Now they have a start time, but I got to imagine these guys were gearing up and really, taking their, not just their strength. I think you work on your strength and rehab all summer. And then you come back and you're ready to go for, an October start, where you're kind of clicking on all cylinders. Now you push that back. It's been a long time. So I don't know how they're going to handle this. This is going to be a tough one, mentally and physically. I think this is going to be a challenge, but whoever can engage the quickest is going to have the best chance of winning, because you don't have many games to mess up. If you have a bad start and the first 10 games are stinkers, you're on the outside looking in, and it goes pretty fast.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Nashville Predators broadcaster Hal Gill.
Hal, back in 2019 when I was doing draft prep to look at who the Jets might take with the 20th overall selection, one player I had my eye on was Philip Tomasino. Obviously, he fell to the Predators at the 24th overall pick. How much excitement is there in Nashville for what this young kid is potentially going to be able to bring to the lineup?
It's tough, isn't it? I see him. I watch him in the World Juniors. And I'm like, this kid can play. And I watch him Juniors last year, and he was lighting it up. He's kind of got a mix of everything that the Preds need. He's got a little size. He's got the skill. He's got the speed. He's got a sense for where to be. I'm excited about it. I just hate getting too excited, because that next jump is tough. Going from junior to the NHL is not an easy jump. But I am excited about it. I think the Preds are really excited. I think he's going to get a shot. I don't think he's got a spot for him. I don't think John Hines is sitting there going, hey, this is your spot, kid. Yours to lose. I think he's got to work for it and try to make that spot. But with a turbulent year, I'm guessing there's going to be guys that are in and out and of the lineup. I can't imagine he wouldn't get a pretty good shot to play some games and to prove himself. And so I'm pretty excited, because honestly, watching in the World Juniors, that's exactly as the game he's bringing is exactly what the Preds need. So it'll be interesting to see come training camp where he fits in and where, ultimately, I think if he wants to go in and plays like a bull, I think he can make a spot for himself, and that's what the Preds are looking for.
Hal, you look at this Predators defense, and obviously, you know, a top pairing with Josi and Ellis, there's nothing wrong with that. Matthias Ekholm, you know, second pairing on that left side, nothing wrong with that. But then you look at that right side, and after Ellis, you know, there's question marks. I mean, Matt Benning is a bottom pairing guy, you know, at this stage in his career. So how essential is it for the Predators' success that Dante Fabbroe be able to continue his development and grow into that second pairing right side defenseman?
Yeah, I think he's been impressive to me as a young defenseman coming in. I think watching Ryan Ellis, he's kind of tailored his game, you know, and not the, you know, you look at Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm, they use their skating so well and they're pushing up the ice. Obviously, Josi, is all over the place. Ekholm has a tendency to push through the neutral zone the same way. But Ryan Ellis has been so steady and solid. I think that's where Fabbroe is falling into. He's got a good sense for the game on the power play, and he was playing the offside, looked really good on that side, and you know, has a good shot, gets shots through. But defensive zone is where I think he's really come a long way, and just a solid position, always facing the play. Has good hips, is able to box out well and position himself well. So I just see that improvement keep coming along. So I'm not really worried about him. I think he's a good second pairing playing with Ekholm. I think that's a good pairing that they can rely on. And then, you know, I've seen a lot of teams against the Preds. You don't want to match up against Josi and Ellis. You don't want to match up against Ekholm. So you try to get your lines against that third pairing, and that was at times the weak link for the Preds. With solid veteran guys like Borowiecki and Benning, I think they can shore that up. We'll see how it shakes out as camp goes along and as the season goes along, but I really think that was a point of emphasis for Poile, is to shore that up and make sure that you know, teams weren't letting their first or second line skip down into the third pairing and take advantage of that. And I think he's done a pretty good job showing that up.
Hal, last question for you here, and this isn't a Predators question, even though we brought you on to talk about the Predators, but what were your initial thoughts when you saw that Zdeno Chara signed with the Washington Capitals? Because I know that you played in Boston, even though that was before Chara played in Boston, but when you were in the Eastern Conference, whether that was with, you know, Toronto or Pittsburgh or Montreal, you faced him many times, because that was a bit of a surprise. We thought that, you know, Chara might stay in Boston or maybe retire, but as, you know, a former defenseman who's maybe the closest in height to Zdeno Chara, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, first thing is I feel bad for being from Boston and knowing that market. They hate seeing people leave, and I feel like after Brady, you know, Brady leaves Boston, and then Krug leaves, and then of course, Chara. You can't take away Chara. So I know they're devastated, but it sounds like the role he was going to get in Boston wasn't what he wanted, and I went through that. Where, you know, I'm playing on teams and they say, okay, you're going to go play on the third pair. And I have guys dumping it in and chasing. And I go, oh, what am I doing out here? I'm not stopping anyone. They're just dumping it in and buzzing. I needed to play against players that were going to try to beat the, you know, first or second line guys. That was my strength. And so when you get older, you get put into a different position. And it sounds like the Caps are more willing to play Chara in a role that he would want to play. So good on Chara to do that. It seems crazy to see him out of a Bruins uniform. He's been there so long, but with a different role, if you're in a position where you can talk to the team about your role and what it's going to be, and you can go to a team that's going to let you play your role, I think that's a win at that stage in your career. And I think any team would love to have his insight on the game and the knowledge that he has. But, you know, you still got to go out there and play the game, and you want to play in the role that you enjoy playing in. So good for him, and good luck to him.
Hal Gill is a Nashville Predators broadcaster, joins us to talk about the Preds ahead of what will be undoubtedly a very unique NHL season. Hal, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Happy New Year to you and yours. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
Likewise, Hal, take care. When we come back, we preview the quarterfinals of the World Junior Hockey Championships. Much more to come. It's a Saturday morning, and you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Winton Byfield.
He's also 18.
Correct.
In a tournament where 19-year-olds tend to dominate.
The youngest player on Canada's roster. Again.
Oh. And he sticks that in the net.
What a shot.
And Cole Perfetti's got his first of the World Junior.
Man, he doesn't waste much time at all here.
Gord Miller, Ray Ferraro on the call. That's Cole Perfetti's only goal of the World Junior Hockey Championships thus far. That's not a shot at him. He's had played a key role for Team Canada, a Team Canada that has basically steamrolled their way through the tournament. Quarterfinal action at the World Junior Hockey Championships is currently underway. Those games available on TSN all day long. And of course, coming up a little bit later on here on TSN Radio 1290, you're going to have quarterfinal action between Sweden and Finland. And then following that, the main event of tonight's matchup, that is going to be Team Canada against Team Czech Republic.
You know, I just wanted to jump in. We should also give a shout out. Like, nobody expects Germany to beat Russia.
Right.
I mean, that would be a huge shocker. But I think after getting whooped by Team Canada, 16-2, missing all of those players, congrats to Germany for making it to the quarterfinal, because I am one of those people, I know you are too, Drew, I think, you know, the IIHF should look at reducing the number of teams, but then you look at Germany, and if it was only 8 teams as opposed to 10, they wouldn't even make it to the quarterfinal. But some of those games were tough to watch.
That's being charitable.
Right.
That's being charitable. They, I mean, that game against, you know, I saw people saying that, you know, well, Germany, you know, Germany should have, Germany said they didn't want to change the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
The IIHF has to step in there and not give Germany the option. They have to rearrange the schedule.
Well, yeah.
Because that was competitively unfair. And, you know, when it's that one-sided, there's potential for injury.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to consider the athletes themselves. You have to take the decision away from the athletes and be the governing body that you allegedly are.
Mm-hmm.
And the IIHF, to no one's surprise, because, you know, they fail more often than not, failed in that instance. So, you know, but to Ezzy's point, you know, you're right, Ezzy. Kudos to Germany for making it this far in the face of all their COVID issues and bouncing back from that, you know, a significant defeat, let's say. Want to take a quick look at the Bodog.net scoreboard, and there's some college football action already underway on TSN. You know, this is a battle for my wife's love. University of Kentucky, her home state, against North Carolina State, her alma mater, in the Gator Bowl. That's available on TSN2 right now, and the Wildcats of Kentucky lead the Wolfpack of North Carolina State 3-0 early in the first quarter there.
Riveting.
Well, just because you don't care doesn't mean that other people don't care, Dave.
I would suspect most people don't care.
Well, college football's bigger than you think, my
friend. That's true, actually. I had a buddy growing up that was a huge college football fan.
And there's
one person.
And coming up on TSN3 in about 5 minutes' time, Mississippi Ole Miss is going to be playing against Indiana in another bowl game. A full day of bowl action, a full day of quarterfinal action at the World Junior Hockey Championships comes to you on TSN all day long today. Brought to you by Bodog.net. That is the Bodog.net scoreboard. Funny how they match that way, you know. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net. Make a play. So let's talk about this quarterfinal action. And Canada plays the Czech Republic, and nobody expects Canada to lose to the Czech Republic, because Canada has looked like a juggernaut for the most part this tournament. And, you know, this game against, you know, the Czech Republic should just be another tune-up. But anytime you're into the elimination round, strange things have happened.
Yep.
We've seen that with the Czech Republic. We've seen that with Sweden. We've seen that, you know, in the Olympics going back years.
Well, Sweden waits to the semis to get knocked out.
Touche. Fair enough. But, you know, Canada has looked like the gold medal favorite we all thought they were going to be. And, you know, the tournament does start anytime there's an elimination game, but we expect that the semifinals are going to be where the tournament really starts for Team Canada.
Absolutely, Drew. I mean, first off, we have to give Czech Republic credit. They beat Russia earlier in the tournament, right? They
shut out upset. Russia.
Lucas Parikh, I apologize if I'm pronouncing his name wrong, but he's a Kings third-round draft pick from 2019. He outplayed Yaroslav Askarov, right, who's obviously one of the top goalie prospects in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, give Czech Republic a lot of credit, but they don't have the firepower to battle with Team Canada. I mean, the goal differential, what is it, plus 29? Canada has 33 goals, and they've only given up four, right? And that's, to me, been probably the biggest surprise. I mean, we knew that Canada was going to, at the very least, get to the quarterfinals, right, guys? But I don't think anybody expected Devin Levi to play all four games and to have the numbers that he's had, right? Like, 950 save percentage, you know, his goals against is, you know, what is it, one or under one? Like, and yes, I mean, they've been playing some pretty bad teams. Germany and Switzerland are not very good.
Yeah.
But he was good against Finland. He didn't face a lot of shots. But, you know, that game against Finland, to me, I think was good for a few reasons. Canada played very well in the first period, right? Shots were something like 17-1, 18-1, but, you know, Finland made a push, and late in that game, it was only a two-goal lead, and I think Canada faced, if you want to call that adversity, because they certainly didn't face any adversity in the first three games, but that game on New Year's Eve, I thought, was, you know, a game where, you know, Canada kind of had to dig deep and find a way to win, so they're going to face a Czech team that is not as skilled as them, but, you know, you've got Michael Tepley, who's a Winnipeg Ice player. I believe he was drafted by Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, Dave. Martin Lang is their top forward. But this Czech team, they're just not going to score enough goals, in my opinion, to fight with Team Canada. And, you know, the way Dylan Cousins is playing, you know, we mentioned Philip Tomasino, Predators draft pick. Quinton Byfield was just outstanding in that game against Switzerland and, you know, was good again against Finland. But, you know, even if
Canada's doing this without who they expected to be their best player, Kirby Dach.
Well, yeah, no Kirby Dach, no Alexis Lafreniere.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, two of the best 18-year-old when you talk about Lafreniere, because he hasn't turned 19 yet. But yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody expected Canada to maybe be this dominant, but at the end of the day, anything can happen in a quarterfinal. And this Parikh is a really good goaltender. Like, this is a guy who I think the Kings envision in a couple of years maybe playing in the NHL. So, I mean, you know that they're going to count a lot on him. They're going to try to keep the game low scoring. But if Canada comes out the way they did against Finland, I mean, Finland is a team that has won three of the last seven gold medals. Like, I realize that, you know, Atu Ratti, and who's the other guy, Dave? Patrick Piustola. There was a couple of guys that didn't make the Finnish team. That they expected to make the Finnish team, but it's still a good team. It might not be, you know, one of the better teams of this tournament, but Canada made them look really bad in that first period. When you can hold a team to one shot on goal in an entire period, that's really impressive. So, yeah, they might not have Alex Newhook, Colorado Avalanche draft pick, but looks like Connor Zeri, who just signed with the Flames, he's going to go in for Newhook. But this is the type of team that even if you're out without a few top first-round draft picks, you're still so deep. So, yeah, we expect Canada to win, but
Things have happened.
Don't expect it to necessarily be a rout.
Well, and you know, so you're saying, well, who's Canada going to play in the semifinals? Well, we don't know that yet because the way it works, it's not bracketed when it comes to the IIHF anymore. So it's, you know, Canada will face the lowest-ranked team, and if it holds to chalk, that'll be Canada against Russia in the semifinals, and then the U.S. would play Finland. But, you know, time will tell if that is how it works out. All depends on how the quarterfinal action ends up happening. You can, of course, watch and hear everything on all of Team Canada's games here on TSN Radio 1290, and all the games, the entire tournament, available on TSN television. When we come back, Samantha Pell of the Washington Post is going to join us, talk about the Capitals, their signing of Chara, the health status of Henrik Lundqvist. We know that obviously, he underwent open heart surgery earlier this week to deal with that heart issue. We'll talk to Samantha about the offseason for the Washington Capitals. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you. Send us your comments. It's not too late. We'll get them on air. You can also do so via texting. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Washington Post, we're pleased to welcome to the program Samantha Pell. Samantha, good morning. Happy New Year. I guess good afternoon over there on the East Coast. Pleasure to have you on the program. How are you?
Yeah, Happy New Year. I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Hey, no complaints whatsoever. The hockey season is very shortly to get underway. Training camp opening in the next couple of days for the teams that have that qualified for the return to play, like the Washington Capitals team that you cover. And Samantha, those Capitals, they made some news this week. I mean, I would say that my eyes popped a little bit when the announcement of Zdeno Chara signing with the Capitals was released. You know, what was your reaction to Zdeno Chara, Washington Capitol defenseman?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely a shocker all around. I mean, you see the name, you see, okay, Chara, Washington Capitals. Is this a joke situation? But no, I think once you kind of look into it more, you kind of see where it pans out. I think, you know, the Capitals already tried to get kind of that veteran guy in Henrik Lundqvist on their roster. Obviously, you know, he announced last month that he has a heart condition and he won't be able to play for the Capitals this season. And obviously everyone wishes him well, but I think the Capitals really wanted to get another veteran guy for this group. Obviously, they feel very strongly about the team and their chances this season of trying to go out and win, you know, another cup with Alex Ovechkin. So, yeah, I think it makes sense when you start to think about it more, but definitely the initial shock, I think, was there for everyone involved.
Well, Samantha, the Chara signing was obviously a signing that you know, made headlines across the NHL, and rightfully so. You know, Chara is a guy that you could argue, you know, will be a Hockey Hall of Famer, but a guy that, you know, I thought, just before Christmas, a signing that I thought was underrated was Connor Sheary. You know, a guy mm-hmm. that, you know, obviously, you know, spent, his early part of his career with Pittsburgh, then went to Buffalo and then went back to Pittsburgh, but, you know, they signed him for, you know, a bargain basement price. And if you can have a guy like Connor Sheary in your bottom six, it seems like, you know, this was a steal for Washington.
Yeah, you know, I think so too. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, Peter Laviolette and his, you know, assistant coaches put him in the lineup. But, you know, the Capitals were in the market for, you know, their 12th forward. They had kind of maybe penciled in their prospect and Daniel Sprong in that role. But I think definitely signing Sheary kind of pushes Sprong out of the lineup. Obviously, there's going to be a camp competition to see how things shake out. You know, obviously the addition of the taxi squad this year, I think, helps a team like the Capitals who are pretty cash strapped. So maybe they can, you know, move some guys around there. But yeah, definitely an underrated signing. And I also think the Capitals signing, you know, a PTO agreement with Craig Anderson in goal, I think is also going to be an interesting storyline headed into camp here soon.
Well, you know, Samantha, that's what I wanted to touch on with you is the goaltending situation, obviously, without Henrik Lundqvist. Now, how will it look? I mean, you obviously, like you just touched on, Craig Anderson signed a PTO. He's 39 years old, though, so he's obviously not going to be playing too many games potentially for the Washington Capitals. So how does it really play out? How does Peter Laviolette envision his goaltending tandem?
Yeah, you know, Peter Laviolette was pretty tight-lipped in terms of, okay, who goal is it actually headed into camp, but everything indicates that Ilya Samsonov is going to be the number one goaltender in Washington next season. You know, I think once they sign Henrik Lundqvist, there might have been more questions of, oh, you know, could they split it 60-40, 50-50? Could Lundqvist actually beat out Samsonov for that number one spot? But, you know, once Lundqvist announced that he won't be playing this upcoming season, it seems to be Samsonov's, you know, job and goal. He's going to be number one, and it's actually going to be a backup competition in between Vitek Vanacek and Craig Anderson. I think the organization feels very strongly about Vitek Vanacek. He's only a prospect. He has no NHL experience, but they feel very strongly about his kind of ceiling, and I think they want to give him that shot as a backup role. But if Craig Anderson comes in and they feel like maybe Samsonov needs that veteran guy behind him, then I don't think it's out of the question that Anderson is the number two guy headed into the season.
Samantha Pell of the Washington Post is our guest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. You know, Samantha, I don't know for sure that the Capitals are the oldest team in the NHL, but they certainly have to be up there towards, you know, in terms of average age. You know, and they don't get any younger when you add 43-year-old Zdeno Chara. With such a compacted schedule and this being such a sprint to the playoffs, you know, 56 games in a short number of time, a lot of back-to-backs. You know, is that a concern? I mean, these athletes are, of course, finely tuned, and they're in tremendous shape. But do you think in the back of their minds there might be a bit of a concern for the actual age on this roster?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a similar question to what we kind of posed before the postseason in Toronto, right? It was, kind of would the veteran teams maybe do better because of their experience, or is it actually kind of those younger guys who have those fresher legs who can kind of rebound after such a long time off? And at least for the Capitals, it just seemed like, you know, I mean, obviously they went out in the first round, they didn't have a good performance, you know, their stars really didn't show up outside of Alex Ovechkin for one game. So I think it is a concern heading into the season for the Capitals. Obviously you have a new coach in Peter Laviolette. He wants to get everything rolling. He has a new system that he's implementing. So I think that's going to take some time for all the guys to adjust there. But I would say it's definitely a concern. I don't think it's, you know, just because they're old, they're not going to do well by any means. But I think it'll definitely be interesting to see, at least for the first month, how things shake out. And I think that should be pretty telling for the rest of the season.
You know, Samantha, you just mentioned Ovi, and that's who I wanted to ask you about, because, I mean, I know that you know this, and everybody in Washington and across the league, you know, knows he's in the last year of his contract. He's a pending UFA, but we all expect him to sign another contract. Do you think that's going to be a storyline as the season progresses in terms of, you know, is Ovechkin going to sign that deal during the season, or, you know, is the understanding that, you know, Ovechkin and his representatives are going to wait until after the season? Like, how much of a not an impact is that going to have on the season, but I guess in Washington, does anybody care that he's in the last year of his deal? Or because, as I mentioned, everyone just assumes he's going to finish his NHL career in Washington. In terms of him signing that next contract, it's just a matter of time, and whenever it happens, it happens.
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, everyone in Washington's pretty aware that, okay, this is his final year. You know, Ovechkin has said multiple times that he wants to, you know, end his at least NHL career in Washington. The Capitals have also expressed multiple times that they want to make things work with their captain and keep him here long term. And overall, you know, the Capitals want to talk to Ovechkin during camp. That's kind of been the plan since the end of last season, you know, when they left the bubble in Toronto. You know, Brian McClellan said, look, we're going to hold off on talks for the summer. We're going to wait till we come back in camp, and then we're going to figure things out. So it's pretty much status quo here in terms of that. I think if it does bleed into the season, it kind of reminds me of the situation the Capitals were in last year with Nicholas Backstrom and Braden Holtby on the last years of their contracts. And the Capitals decided to go ahead and, you know, give that extension to Nicholas Backstrom midway back in January. And then obviously opted not to extend Braden Holtby. He's with the Canucks now. So I don't think it's a major concern. Obviously, the Capitals can get things done midseason. I don't think Brian McClellan feels like he needs to make a deal in camp, but definitely talks are going to get underway here once Ovechkin and, you know, Brian have a chance to chat in camp.
You know, Samantha, you know, with teams like the Washington Capitals that perennially finish, you know, top of the league, you know, year after year, you generally don't have a ton of draft picks that you get to look forward to, because usually they're drafting later in the first round, in all the rounds, I should say. Are there any players that are coming out of Hershey for this year that they could potentially take a big role, bigger role with Washington?
You know, I think at least in this season, no. I think Daniel Sprong maybe was the biggest name that the Capitals were looking for to kind of add into their lineup. But kind of what we just talked about earlier, I think Connor Sherry kind of pushes him out there as the team's 12th forward, at least initially to start the season. We'll see how things go. I think a lot of people just, you know, outside of Hershey, I guess Martin Saravari, he played in 6 NHL games last season. But the Capitals now have nine defensemen on one-way contracts. Currently on their roster, and that does not include Saravari, so it seems like he's also kind of getting pushed out maybe for this season. We could see him on the taxi squad and maybe filling in and out, but I would say those two guys are pretty big. And then obviously outside of Hershey, the biggest prospects for the Capitals are Connor McMichael. He's, you know, at World Juniors right now with Canada, and also Hendrick Lapierre, the guy that they just drafted this season. And so I think those are probably the biggest names, but I would say the ones to look forward to this season are probably Daniel Sprong and Martin Saravari, if he can crack any sort of the lineup.
Samantha Pell is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Samantha covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. You know, Samantha, he doesn't get a lot of notoriety, certainly because of, you know, the bigger names on the Capitals roster, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Carlson, etc. But Jacob Vrana had a tremendous year last year, career year in only 69 games, 52 points. You know, what's the ceiling for this player? You know, a guy who, like I said, doesn't get sort of the notoriety maybe outside of Washington that a lot of the other players do.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think a lot of people within the Capitals organization are super high on Jacob Vrana. A lot of their scouts were super high on him when they, you know, obviously saw him at a very young age. Then he went through, you know, the Hershey system, came up to Washington, and he's had career years the last two seasons. But, you know, one of the main concerns there is kind of his playoff performances. He had 0 points in both last season's postseason and the year prior. So it's a little concerning from that standpoint, but definitely his ceiling is super high. I know Peter Bonder has talked about Jacob Varane a lot. He really likes him, you know, how he operates. I think it'll be very interesting to see if maybe he can get some more playing time on the power play. Obviously, Washington's pretty stacked with their first unit, so he's kind of stuck on the second unit for the last two seasons. But I think he's the type of guy that's really electric. He's fast. He knows how to, you know, manage around the goal. And I think he has a really high ceiling. But again, this Capitals team is so deep, has so many superstars that he is kind of lost in the shuffle a lot of the time.
You know, Samantha, we talked about Peter Laviolette earlier, and you know, I feel like, you know, we have to end the interview that way. Last question for you here. And, you know, Laviolette is obviously a guy that has so much experience. How much do you think the Capitals organization is going to lean on that experience, and how many times he's been that first-year coach, you know, whether that's with, you know, Carolina, Philadelphia, or most recently Nashville? Because it seems like, you know, Peter Laviolette always gets his team into the playoffs, and oftentimes they go far in the playoffs, especially early on in his tenure with the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when the Capitals made this hire, they were thinking, you know, win-first mentality. This isn't a coach that's going to have to come in and kind of reconstruct things and maybe it'll work out in 2 years. It's, you know, he's going to come in. He has Alex Ovechkin. He has a Nicholas Backstrom, a John Carlson. You had a Chara, you know, a TJ Oshie, all these big guys, big names. And so his job was to come in and win. And that's kind of his goal for the season. So I think there is a lot riding on Peter Laviolette, how he pushes different players, how he's going to make adjustments, how he's going to turn things around for a Washington team that won the Cup, you know, 3 years ago, and then the last 2 years they've gone out in the first round with little pushback in the playoffs. So I do think it's a really good hire for the Capitals, and you know what he brings, kind of that new energy, that new system, that new look, and I think the Capitals are really looking forward to what he can bring to the table.
Samantha Pell covers the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post. Samantha, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, absolutely, anytime.
Take care, Samantha. Thanks again. When we come back, one final segment, we're going to look at a lot of the signings and the acquisitions and really a very newsy couple weeks in the NHL. We'll touch on it all. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Some news from the NHL. Pierre-Luc Dubois has signed a 2-year, $10 million contract with the Blue Jackets. He was one of the few remaining restricted free agents that didn't have a contract headed into camp. Dubois was on pace for a third straight 20-goal season before the stoppage and had 10 points in 10 playoff games.
Pierre-Luc Dubois getting that contract signed. We'll see what his long-term future has to hold in Columbus. Allegedly, he has requested a trade from the organization, but that's a long way away from actually having been traded. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment for you on Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You know, it's a good value for Columbus, certainly, the 2-year, $10 million deal, especially if Dubois continues with his breakout performance like we saw in the bubble in Toronto, where he was an absolute force on the ice and absolutely dominant. And it's hard to believe that the Blue Jackets, again with another centerman, can be going through the same scenario that they went through with Ryan Johansson, where the player is disgruntled, they eventually sign him, and then they eventually have to trade him. You wonder how many. Now, the
that trade worked out.
That worked out well.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's no guarantee, of course, that that same success is going to come their way if this ends up coming to fruition. But, you know, a good deal for Columbus. And even Dubois, you know, next year his qualifying offer is going to be pretty high, so he's going to get paid his big contract pretty soon. It's a matter of, is that with the Blue Jackets or not?
Yeah, I really like Dubois. And, you know, you mentioned Ryan Johansson.
Yeah.
You know, they went through this with Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky as well, right?
Sure.
Like, I mean, obviously, you know, Panarin wasn't with the Blue Jackets for very long, and Bobrovsky was. But, I mean, if you're a Columbus Blue Jackets fan, I mean, you got to feel sorry for them. I mean, especially, like, Dubois is a prototypical first-line center, mm-hmm. like, on most teams. Like, obviously, you know, if you're Pittsburgh, you've got Crosby or Malkin, maybe it's tougher. But the point is, like, this is a guy that I think everybody expects to put up, you know, 70 to 80 points. He's only 22 years old.
Yeah.
Like, you forget, and, you know, Dave and I were at that draft in Buffalo, and he was drafted right after Patrick Laine, and it was a bit of a shocker, right?
Because everyone thought it was going to be Kotkaniemi.
Yeah.
Puljujärvi.
Yeah, I know who you meant, Drew. But, yeah, so Dubois has, he has taken that perfect trajectory, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you weren't sure, you know, was it going to take him, you know, a couple of years? And then he came into the NHL right away, and it seems like he continues to get better and better. And we don't know what's happened there, you know, if it's been, you know, because you hear that this negotiation has taken almost a year, right? Aaron Portsline, our good buddy of The Athletic, reported that. And he mentioned that when Ryan Johansson went through that contract negotiation, like, it was nasty. Mm-hmm. And the writing was on the wall that the Blue Jackets were going to trade Johansson. So it's really unfortunate, and you got to expect, if Dubois is traded, you know, whether it's, you know, in the next few weeks, month, this year, next year, whatever, the return's going to be big, Dave. Because, yeah, you know, you talk about a big guy, you know, big physical guy, good defensively, you know, can put up good offensive numbers. You know, a lot of teams covet that.
This is your reminder, of course, that his father, Eric Dubois, is an assistant coach with the Manitoba Moose.
Well, I guess I don't have to say it. You just stole my line.
I knew I stole it from you, Dave.
I was going to say, well, you know, his father would like to watch him play quite a few times if he got traded here to Winnipeg.
Yeah, but, you know, obviously we're not putting that out there, but certainly people are connecting the dots given, you know, the uncertainty around Patrick Laine's status here in Winnipeg. You know, long-term status, and obviously the uncertainty still with Dubois' long-term status. You know, not saying that there's a match, but saying that it's obviously people, you know, are, you know, putting one and one together and thinking there might be something there, which obviously is a conversation that we can get into over the coming weeks and months, especially after we hear from Patrick Laine, this coming week, hopefully, that we can bring to, you know, we'll talk about next Saturday on the show. You know, other signings, you know, Vince Dunn.
Good deal for St. Louis.
Yeah, a one-year, $1.875 million contract. You know, this was another RFA. He's an RFA defenseman. He obviously doesn't go for the full bridge deal. It's only a one-year contract. You know, you got to love that for St. Louis's perspective. They also have signed Mike Hoffman to a PTO with the expectation. It sounds like there's a contract basically in a drawer just ready to be filed
once
with the NHL.
Once the guys on LTIR.
Yeah, once they have to, you know, rearrange their LTIR and things like that, where it's going to be about $4-4.5 million a season for Mike Hoffman. Ezzy, your thoughts on Dunn and Hoffman? Sorry, Dave.
Well, I mean, these are bargain basement deals, right? Like Vince Dunn is a really good defenseman, and obviously it's a prove me contract. He's going to make a lot more money on his next contract, but, you know, Mike Hoffman is a perennial, you know, 30 goal scorer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought, you know, Nashville might be a fit, but as soon as Nashville got Mikael Granlund, you know, it looked like Hoffman wouldn't be a fit there.
I'd rather have Hoffman than Granlund.
Well, yeah, Hoffman is a prolific goal scorer. There's no doubt about it. So, I mean, you lose Pietrangelo in the summer, but you sign Torrey Krug, and Mike Hoffman is a guy that you're going to get for $4 million prorated.
Yeah.
So, like St. Louis, I think, you know, if they took a step back, it wasn't a huge step back. So that was a little bit surprising. I didn't necessarily think Hoffman would end up in St. Louis.
Worth noting, of course, that they're going to be without Steen, who retired because of his injury, and Tarasenko on LTIR also.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I mean, they will be without Tarasenko. Steen is a guy, you know, that we didn't expect to announce his retirement. So it's a good point. And Hoffman is an upgrade over Alex Steen just because of the stage of Steen's career. So, you know, a really astute signing by Doug Armstrong. Even though it's not an official signing, it's a PTO at this point, but we expect it to be a signing. As you mentioned, Drew, $4-4.5 million is a great steal.
For a guy who's going to get you 30 goals and there's no long-term commitment to him. You're
good power play
that.
Guy. He's not the best defensive player. We know that, but he's a goal scorer.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're paying for goals. You're not paying. And St. Louis is obviously a very good defensive team. So yeah, I'm really impressed with the moves the Blues made.
You know, interesting note on the Blues was the fact that Tarasenko was a little bit vocal about not being named captain.
I saw that. That was sort of surprising.
I thought it actually went under the radar a little bit that it wasn't really talked about. It was just, you know, I mean, I just thought it was interesting that you know, there was, I think it was Jeremy Rutherford who wrote about it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a little bit of an under the radar, you know, situation at least that.
But,
you know,
is there anybody who would choose Tarasenko over Ryan O'Reilly as the captain? I mean, first of all, Tarasenko can't stay healthy, so it's hard to have to give your captaincy to a guy who's not in the lineup and is going to be on LTIR to start the year.
I just thought it was an interesting note for
definitely caught my attention as well. You don't see a player vocally, you know, say that he's disappointed not being named captain, and that was what happened with Tarasenko in St. Louis. That's it for this Saturday morning. Boy, that flew by. Thanks for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. In case you missed any of the show, it'll be available for download on iTunes. It's available on Google Play. It's wherever you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the show. It's also available, of course, on TSN1290.ca and on IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor, doing a great job back at the station. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for World Junior Hockey Championship coverage all afternoon long on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.